Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast.
My name's Keith Schertz. This is CougarCast, and I'm with the 2002 Daily Herald, Utah County, name of the year, Tosh McIntosh. And it's basketball season, and not only is it basketball season, it is the season that people have been waiting for over 5 years.
Yeah, the big-time recruits are here, and somehow we even managed to get their coach, you know? So, like, we have got a squad that should be fun to watch this year and for the next several years.
So a lot of recruiting stars on this on the clock here, but you know, there's a lot of inexperience with this group, but we've got a lot of questions heading into the season. In fact, Tosh, I wrote and we've put together 22 big questions. Why 22? We love Danny Ainge. That's why. So question number one, Tosh, that we want to go through on this one. Nick Emery, obviously, biggest guy on the team coming back, not in terms of size, but his how important he'll be to the team. Nick Emery going to be huge this year, but Nick Emery had his little incident with Brandon Taylor. Is he a villain?
No. For Utah fans, he is, but for the world right now, no. But I hope he becomes a villain, sticking daggers in the WCC hearts. And I think that he has the fiery attitude and for sure the skill set to break a lot of hearts of our opponents and their fans.
See, no. The answer is no? You don't think that
he'll
be
there's one,
by the end of the year? Will
one
he
fan
be a villain?
Base right now that he's a villain. By the end of the year, I think he has the personality for sure to be a villain.
I think that his style of floor, okay, and now let me expand it a little further.
He won't back down.
He will not back down. He's confident, right? And he doesn't look like somebody that ought to have that sort of cockiness and chutzpah. And so because of that, I do think that people will be put off by Nick Emery. He'll be one of those guys that you love to have on your team, and it's so fun because he's our guy. But everybody else is just going to be so annoyed by him. I think he's going to do more to complain to referees about fouls this year. I think he's going to do things this year that will get under people's skin, and that'll be important. But I have to ask this next question, Tosh. This isn't part of our 22, but you combine that. Eric Mika had some, you know, he showed the choke after the game at St. Mary's when they choked. But he did it to their fan base. Is there a chance that if BYU is as good as some people think that they're going to be, if they're going to be a team that makes consistent runs deep in March, is there a chance that this BYU team with this group of players, that they'll be the first Cinderella team to be hated by America?
I think there's a chance, and it's not even necessarily a bad thing. I think that people want BYU to play as a certain level of nice guys.
Sure.
And I see that, but I think I look at the personalities and the fieriness on this team. We've got some guys that can flat out ball, and they are not choir boys. They are not afraid to scrap. They are not afraid to throw taunts at fans. And when you're BYU, that's looked under a microscope. I think for sure this team could be a polarizing love them or hate them team.
And if there's anything that people hate, it's entitlement. I mean, these guys are from Alpine, Utah. Like, I mean, there's a chance. This formula's there that this could be a hated Cinderella team. Like, America may turn their back on a Cinderella team. That's never happened before, Todd.
But I think if anything rallies a fan base, I think fan bases actually rally behind when their team is hated.
So here's what I'm predicting. If they are truly good and make several Sweet 16s, like some feel that they may, this group will not be remembered as like the Lone Peak 3, right? They'll be the Bad Boys. They'll be like, or something similar to that. There will be something like that, you know, that era of the Pistons. Does that make sense? But in the early 90s. I just, in late
the 80s, only thing 90s. Against that is that we don't really play defense. I don't think we're going to play defense enough to... I think the teams that really get under other teams' skins
dirty.
Are the ones that are playing such tough defense that teams think that it's cheap and dirty.
Yeah.
Where...
Well, I'm sorry, I think it's harder. Eric Mika threw the hardest block out that Larry Krzyzkowiak has seen in his 40 years in basketball.
That is true. It doesn't take much to scare old Larry, though.
No,
but,
it doesn't.
But that, I just think the only thing against the villain argument is that I don't know when you're outscore your opponent's team in shootouts if all of a sudden that gets the fan base to hate you as much as... But we for sure... There's enough ingredients into the possibility that we have.
Also, white guys in
college. It's actually worth thinking about.
It's something to think about. Question number two. Nick Emery, next evolution in his game. Essentially, there were no flaws in his overall game offensively last year. So you start to ask for some of the more specific things. Tosh, the thing that he could do to take his game to the next level, there's two areas where he was weak, okay? But the biggest one is, has he added the ability to find his way to the line?
I hope so. That he has the athleticism. I think he has the handles. I think last year that was somewhat of an element of playing against bigger guys for the first time, faster guys, being fresh off his mission, suffering that foot injury right before the season.
Getting used to the speed, letting savviness be part of what you do.
All of that being gone now, that is how he takes his game to the next level. He's such an efficient free throw shooter that, just like a lot of the greats in the NBA and college have done, has found a way to increase their free throws. He needs to do that to take his game to the next level.
I'm with you. I think it'll go up a little. You know, that was the big difference for Steph Curry. His first years, he was fine. He shot well. He did good in the NBA. When he started going to the stripe, and yeah, he started shooting a lot more threes. But when he started going to the stripe, that is when he became an MVP-level player. And that'll be the difference for Nick Emery. For the sake of interest, the other section of his game, Tosh, that he hopefully added to it, there's only one scenario in which Nick Emery struggled, and it was shooting when he'd run off a screen. He wasn't like Ray Allen last year, okay? Shooting off the screen was tough for him. He took 36 shots on the catch and shoot off a screen, okay? He went 5 for 36 in those opportunities.
Yeah, it's terrible. You were reading me some of his other stats. He was lights out from like every other statistical shooting standpoint, but his weakness... And so I just don't know if he needs to improve on that, or if we just stop running him off of screens to get him looks, because that's not his game. Who knows?
Well, and maybe he can add it to his game. But
yeah.
But those are basically the two things that you would expect Nick Emery to do better as a player this season. Oh, one other thing, you know, Nick Emery, I believe he is at 14 games in a row. So, again, if he has a game this year where he doesn't get into double-figure scoring, Danny Ainge's consecutive double-figure scoring streak will live on. Okay. So there you go. So he's got a long way to go to get there. It's 122.
If there was someone that could do it, it's him.
He's on pace for it, and he would have to have no mistakes the rest of his career, and he can't have stuff where he's, you know, kicked out of games or – suspended, because he needs every single game in order to get there. So it'll be a fascinating element. But you know, when everybody was cheering, like, we'd pay attention to Kyle Collinsworth's scoring line, Tosh.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, oh, he's so close to a triple-double. It would be awesome if every time Nick Emery got to his 10th point, if there was like a little added eruption in the crowd. But that won't happen.
It's such a long ways away. That's not happening.
Another couple of years.
Yeah.
All right, question three of our 22 big questions. Eric Mika back on the team, Tosh. Obviously, an efficient scorer, an okay defender. And the question, though, is the biggest problem Eric Mika had was foul problems. He had a hard time staying on the floor. Foul trouble in general is going to be an issue with that front line this year. Yoeli Childs seems particularly bad. Like, it's bad enough that he, like, wishes he fouled as much as Nate Austin.
So, you think Nate's worried that Childs is going for his record?
Yes. But when Corbin Cafusi joins the team, when you have Mika and Yoeli, okay, I really worry about having depth there on that front line. Foul trouble is going to be an issue. Eric Mika is the one that's most important. Will foul trouble still be a problem for Eric? That is one of the things that we
have to
watch.
There's no reason to say that it's not going to still be a problem. I think that he could improve on it. I was somewhat joking earlier when I said we got the Lone Peaks coach, but I actually think that that's going to be a big help. He's got another voice that he can trust that has helped him very much in the past. And that I think with the coaching staff, there's definitely ways and things he could do to not keep getting these sort of fouls. But he's not just going to become where he was getting two fouls in like the first minute of games.
He was.
And
so
they,
much so
you don't
that
go
they,
from,
started, they started playing Josh Sharp in front of him simply for the fact of, you know, let those quick fouls, let the refs establish the game on somebody else.
You don't go from that to being a guy that doesn't get into foul trouble anymore. So he still will get in foul trouble. I'm hoping to see some improvement, though.
All right, question four. Tosh, maybe the biggest thing they're going to miss from Kyle Collinsworth is his rebounding. Where are they going to replace those rebounds?
It's going to have to be a group effort. Obviously, I think Mika is going to need a rebound better than he did his freshman year. That's what he's a great player, but his measurables, his arms and his hands are not as big as you'd expect from a big man as tall as him. But he's still such an athletic freak for his size that he needs to get more boards than he did. We had Davis last year.
He's a good rebounder.
But he's a great rebounder. We need Yoeli to stay on the floor. And then I think that we need our guards to probably crash the boards harder than all of them did last year, except Kyle. You know, Kyle hit them hard.
Yeah. Kyle enabled a lot of the small ball lineups that they were able to do because he was able to rebound.
And he could guard 1 through 4.
And he could guard 1 through 4. So small ball becomes a little less possible without Kyle Collinsworth. And also because of perhaps a depth issue at the wings, but the point is that they're gonna have to find rebounding somewhere, and Eric Mika needs to improve in that way. He'll be important for that. Question number five: Kyle Davis last year, I tracked plus and minus stats for everybody. I've already done it for the first exhibition game this year, Tosh. But I tracked plus minus, and I did it per player and per lineup that they played in. And it was quite clear that Kyle Davis is most comfortable playing with a stretch four and allowing himself to be the only one near the basket to post up and to work around the paint. Can Kyle Davis, so this is my fifth big question for the season, can Kyle Davis learn how to play with another big? Because he's going to have to. He's going to have to be out there with Yoeli. He's going to have to be out there with Mika. He doesn't have those rebounds coming from Collinsworth anymore.
He's going to have to, because he's not going to be, I think with how many bigs we have, I don't think it's going to be very often that he's in a lineup where he was like last year, where he's the only big on the floor. But he has a couple things that he needs to work on. Number one is passing. And especially
passing from the post once he gets it down there.
Once he gets down there, if they throw it to the post, he never passes it out.
But if you can pass from the post, that's one of those.
I even want him to pass it out for a repost.
Right.
You know, that never happens. But where him and Mika could be just dynamic is that when the team goes to double one of them, if they can become good passers to get the ball back to the other big. And that's what I am hoping to see, but I'm actually not that confident we're going to see it.
All right, question number six. Tosh, how mad is Stephen Bayo at me?
He is probably not aware of you.
He's aware of an action I took.
That's true, but he might not know that you had a part in it.
Here's the quick story. Stephen Bayo was wearing number 14. That was Mel Hutchins' number, and it was retired. And according to a press release, it was retired entirely. And so I had written an article. I had reached out before that article was published to BYU to ask the question why Stephen Bayo was wearing the number 14. It was an oversight. That's a direct quote from the sources at BYU to me. And the oversight on his number, and so they went out and they reached out to Nike and were able to switch Stephen Bayo's number to 10. But Bayo wore 14 in high school, wears his hair just the same way as Troy does in High School Musical, Tosh. Troy in High School Musical, played by Zac Efron, wore number 14 for the Wildcats. Bayo wore 14. I honestly kind of think that he intentionally was trying to draw the comparisons of to himself that made him seem more like Zac Efron, and more power to him. That's not a bad strategy. For a college kid trying to get the ladies on his side, that's not a bad strategy, Tosh. But it doesn't work anymore, at least with the number. He can't wear Troy's number from High School Musical anymore because it belongs to Mel Hutchins. It's up in the stands. No longer wearing 14, Tosh. He wears number 10.
We need our Twitter following to tweet at him and ask if you're onto something. And say, Keith Schertz thinks that he may have ruined your plan to be some character from High School Musical. And true or false?
It's also, to give some credit, it's also been hypothesized by the people over at the Cougs on Cougs show that's also on Vegas. All right. So, but I also think, so I think that's the reason he's mad, or if he just really loves the number 14, it means something to his family. He can't wear it anymore, and it's sort of my fault. So there you go. But all right, so that's that. So he doesn't know who I am, that's fine, but how mad is he at me? He didn't answer.
Well, once he gets those tweets and realizes, he probably won't admit it, but he will know that he had this big master plan and that this powerful man named Keith Schertz just came and ripped it out from him.
Hurt his ability for the ladies to make the Zac Efron.
Yep. It was going to be so subliminal. Like, I'm saying that bad. Subliminal.
Yeah.
That they would see him in that number and just think, oh my gosh, there's something about him I've just always grown up loving. And he will not have that now.
Oh, man. All right. Question number 7. Davin Gwynn, the Michael Jordan of garbage time last year. Unbelievable stats. He'd come in during garbage time last year, Tosh, and absolutely own the other team's garbage players.
Yeah.
He is now going to start. It appears he will be the starter against Princeton in our opening game. Davin Gwynn, playing the 3.
I don't think he's going to be a big minutes guy, but I think that he is a serviceable guy at the 3. Like, I think we are surprised because he wasn't on anybody's radar at all until some late game antics last year. But from everything I've seen, the guy's a legitimate D1 player. Like, I think he'll be able to hold his own. We don't need 4 dynamic offensive guys out there. We need some guys to be role players, and I think he can fit that Bill very well.
So you think he can hold up though as a steady rotation player? I mean, we don't know. He's only really played garbage time, and he got significant minutes against the Seattle Pacific team, but against Princeton, like right away. I mean, Princeton's a really good team. Like,
it's going to come down to his defense. If he can play serviceable defense, I think he continues to get big minutes for the whole year. But if he can't, then they're going to The 3 is the question mark, and they'll try some different things to see if they find the answer at the 3.
We'll have more on the small forward spot, but as of now, it looks like Davin Gwynn, which is just that's a bombshell. You know, you get all these 4-star recruits, Tosh, and everyone's all excited, and the next thing you know, you get a kid that's a walk-on the season before.
Yeah.
And he's going to be your starting 3.
Good for him.
And good for him, but it also sort of undo some of the good work you did recruiting these high-level guys.
No. He's not starting over anybody that I think's ticked, except maybe... Well, maybe Childs, but Childs a freshman.
And you're gonna see L.J. Rose and Elijah Bryant. Like, he won't be starting as soon as L.J.
And I don't think he's gonna get the big minutes. Even if he is, there's gonna be enough different player rotations and lineups that everyone I think should be able to get their minutes.
All right, number eight. Another big question about the 2016-17 BYU basketball season. Which player will complement Eric Mika best? At the four.
That's a tough question. I don't know because I don't think any of them. I actually think Peyton Dastrup. That's my answer.
Maybe he's the best passing, but in the short term,
he's the best passing big man. But right now, I don't think he hasn't shown enough that.
Well, he doesn't. He's not in shape.
I don't think
his body isn't what it's going to be.
Is the guy anywhere in the near future for that?
Right.
But because of that, he's my only one that I think has a chance of really being a passing big man to help Mika and to be able to. We need also, if it's not a passing big man, we need a stretch four,
right,
to give him some space, and I don't think we have that either.
Well, I mean, Davis shot it from three a few times last year. He actually made a few, but
I don't have confidence in that.
No, neither do I. But the question, I mean, Dave, but we know Davis doesn't really like playing stretch, and beyond that, he doesn't do good with another big player.
He was much better when he was the only big
when
on the
floor.
When
he was in there with Celius or when they had Chapman in as the four, you know, he was a lot better there. So the question is yeah, I don't know who that fourth guy is going to be, and that'll be one of the big things that they're going to have to discover this season. All right, question nine. Colby Leafson, Tosh. Colby Leafson. A lot of excitement about Colby Leafson. We didn't even know this kid was going to be on the team until, you know, at the end of the season last year. We didn't expect him to be here, but here he is. Colby Leafson, can he fill in sort of where Zach Celius left off? He won't be as good, right?
He's not going to be as good.
He played major minutes, though.
He can hit threes. Mm-hmm. He can, and that's where the similarity lies. I think after that, who knows? That Celius was able to play surprisingly good defense and, yeah, and was a great rebounder. And so he had three serviceable attributes that gave him – that he was the surprise player as a freshman because of that.
Yeah.
But
– Well, and he was really good at the four. I guess the question is to augment the question a little, can he play the four? Like Celius? I'm really curious to find that out this year.
Who knows? We know he can hit the three. And if you can hit the three, Rose will find a way for you to get on the floor.
Well, and beyond that, if you're Colby Leafson right now, and your defense, like, you're the third or fourth thing that they're worried about on the floor. How many open threes, you know, is a Davin Gwynn, a Colby Leafson, a, you know, that third guy out there, you know, they got to devote one to either Mika or Davis underneath. Then you've also got to put a lot of attention out there on Emery or Hawes. And so because of that, there's a lot of open looks coming, right?
Yeah, totally.
For Bayo, Leafson, like whoever that fourth guy is, man, they're going to have a lot of open shots. So, yeah. Ugh. Why do we have kids go on missions, Tosh?
Well, there's some big important reasons. All right. But from a basketball standpoint, it does throw things off.
It'd be nice to have Zach Celius this year. Question 10. The freshman funk, Tosh. I'm worried about the freshman funk. Each year when you have freshmen, you get 20 games into the season. It's the longest basketball season they've played. And it's at the highest level of basketball. And their legs, sometimes they don't hold up, Tosh. We've got a lot of young legs in their first season that we're really relying on to take on major minutes. In fact, T.J. Hawes led the team. He had 37 minutes. He played 37 minutes against Seattle Pacific in the first exhibition game. We relied on him heavily in an exhibition game. So, you know, how is it when the freshman funk comes, how bad is it going to take hold on the team as a whole? And then do they have an answer to get through that 5 or 6 game slog, and then their body seemed to kind of recover. But at that point, everyone's tired.
I think part of it might have been that they knew it was going to be such a long time until their next game that they played these guys some big time minutes, but there's no way that during the season they're going to be able to give these young, haven't played basketball in a long time, these insane, it's just not going to work. But I also think once we get Rose back and once we get Bryant back, that it doesn't even work. We can't give guys that many minutes and keep everyone happy either. And so I think the problem's going to take care of itself once those guys come back.
I like it. It's a good question. It's a good answer. Well done. Question 11. Does Zach Frampton at the end of the bench, I don't know that he'll play much, but he's been added to the team as a walk-in. Zach Frampton, does he cry a little each time when people say Lone Peak 3 and he's left out? He's like, it's Lone Peak 4, guys.
He should. Yeah. So
that's one of the big questions.
I'm sure he does. Maybe if we'll ever see it on the bench, that's the biggest unknown. But for sure, I think that his mom will tell us that, yeah, that he does cry about being left out. I think that the Lone Peak 3 thing, I hope that that saying kind of goes away. It probably won't. And it doesn't, like, it's not like a big pet peeve of mine.
It'll be this year.
But I just think
then that I think maybe
for the away. Betterment of the team,
yes.
if those guys are, if we have, because I think Bayo has the chance to be a real player. I think that that Bryant, that Rose, that these guys, and I don't want there to be weird pressure on that those guys are supposed to stand out even outside of the team.
Question 12. Nothing better than a guy that's always looking to throw it down, right? I mean, BYU doesn't have these guys often, but Eric Mika tried to dunk quite a lot as a freshman, and it appears he will continue to do that. But there was no fewer than 6 alley-oop attempts to Eric Mika against Seattle Pacific in the first exhibition game, Tosh. How many Eric Mika alley-oop jams this season on average? Let's do it by game.
One a game that is successful. I think we'd try more than that. But in an exhibition, they're trying more. And it was against a smaller team. Like, that team didn't have any, like, legit bigs.
Right.
But I think that these guys, they like to play efficient, but at the same time, they're not afraid of having some flash. I think they throw multiple lobs to him a game, and that we get at least one every game.
I like it. And I hope he gets a lot of dunks. And the best part about it is that the crowd really responds to that. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's one of those things. Advanced stats are wonderful, but they don't account for things like the bench getting hyped and the crowd getting more into it and louder on the next defensive possession because you were able to get a big dunk or an alley-oop. So I like that we're going for them. I'm certain it'll be annoying at times because we'll have needless turnovers at times because we'll get trying to go for them too frequently. You know, I worry about that a little bit with this team anyway. The highlight three, it's like somebody's got to be workmanlike and just put on the hard hat and just put up the numbers. They need somebody to be a little Tyler Haase. And
I don't think we have that guy.
I don't know that we have any of that.
The funny thing is the least like that guy is TJ Haase.
Right.
Like, he is really not the same player as his brother.
Right.
He from a lots of different standpoints.
Well, and I think we need somebody to take that role and just kind of fill up the stat sheet. And it's fine if it's flashy and we've got that happening and it's with some flash. But sometimes what happens is we're busy throwing behind the back passes or, you know, I kind of the relentless boringness and consistency of Tyler Haase was amazing. I loved it. I loved him so much.
He would just score a bunch of points without you realizing it. All of these players are guys that when they score, you're going to realize it because they do it with some flair.
Yeah, so I'm just curious who – I think the guy this year for that is probably Kyle Davis.
Yeah.
He can probably go out there and put a 12-6 on every night.
It's way too early for me to be excited about this guy because we haven't played any real games, but I think Bayo might be the guy that just goes out there and puts up some points.
He's a flash guy.
He's a jump shooter, man. Like,
yeah.
He hits some mid-ranges, and all of a sudden he's in double digits and people don't realize
Tosh
it.
Is loving Stephen Bayo.
I am.
I don't think we're going to see him that much.
I think
by the time we get Elijah Bryant back and we get LJ Rose back, I think Stephen Bayo is going to be lost in the mix.
Time will tell.
You don't like it, Tosh. You don't like that I just said that.
I think that Bayo has 10-plus double-digit scoring games.
It's defense. That's the problem. And that gets us into big question number 13. When we got a perimeter player on the other team that's really quite good, do we have someone that we can assign to him? Do we have a lockdown perimeter defender?
No, except Bayo. No, I'm just kidding on Bayo. But I don't think we do. I don't think that is...
We haven't had one since Charles Abua.
And that's right? A glaring weakness. That you... Great teams have somebody that you can put on the other team's great player and you know it's going to give them a tough night. I hope we do. I hope someone on this team can do that I don't realize. But as of right now, no player stands out to me of having the ability. Maybe Rose or Bryant. We don't know what they can do.
Nick Emery's better at defense than he gets credit for.
Correct. But he doesn't have the size enough to be...
Yeah, a real disruption.
A real... Like
the guy with the body to do it is Elijah Bryant.
Yep. And LJ Rose, people talk that he's a good defender. But right now he's like a myth, like this urban ghost. Hopefully he gets healthy and can play defense.
Question number 14. This is a big one. All right. This is a big burning question. Freshman TJ Haas. He's got red hair. He's a great shooter. But the thing that I'm wondering, Tosh, will he have hair on senior day?
On his
senior day, not this year's senior day.
If there's anybody that's prepared to answer this question, it's me.
Tosh used to have beautiful hair. He came in, he was a freshman.
Yep.
His wife fell in love with him because of his hair, I think.
And then by the time I got married as a sophomore, I was shaving my head as a bald man. So I will say a resounding no. That TJ Haas will not have hair as a senior. I'm going to take this one step further.
You don't think he'll hang on to it? No. I kind of hope that he just rocks like a horseshoe, like an old
game one of his sophomore year, he will play bald. And that's not an indictment. I think that many of us are better looking once we just give in to the shave your head movement.
Yeah.
And that I think that his dad is a shaved head man. His brother Tyler somehow...
He hung on to it.
...got some different genes, but that TJ is going to be a bald-headed, assassin, insanely good player for most of his BYU career.
All right, question number 15. We're going to talk a little bit about Jamal Ates. Jamal Ates broke everyone's heart as a high school recruit. Everyone at BYU thought that maybe he'd be coming. He decided to go to UNLV. After a few games, he decided to come back to BYU. And since then, it's just been a cavalcade of injuries. Can Jamal Ates be healthy this year? That's a huge question for me.
I sure as heck hope so. Because the guy is a physical specimen. And I think that when you look at the teams on our schedule that I worry about, it's the Gonzagas and the... We didn't have anyone big enough to be able to play. Now that we have Mika, now that we'll have Kafusi, but Ates, I think, gets forgotten. That guy is freaking strong. His back, the guy's yoked. And that he needs to be healthy. And we can find, I don't know if he's going to be an every game sort of difference maker, but for sure there will be situations we can use a guy with his skill set and size.
Well, this is the show me year for Jamal Ates. If he is not a rotation player this year, Tosh, it's over, isn't it?
Totally. Because last year, this is just from memory, but it seems like there was probably more games that he didn't play than he did play.
Yeah.
And if that happens again as a junior, then
It's very rare that suddenly you're a senior.
Those guys don't even play. They're not even on the team their senior year.
Especially because the guys that are going to be playing in front of him are underclassmen to him.
Totally.
So this is a put up or shut up year for Jamal Ates. Now, I have to say, the fact that Jamal Ates struggled his first two seasons, that doesn't alarm me. Big men take longer, Tosh. I just think he's a below-the-rim guy. He has to change his game to playing taller players than him. He didn't have to do that in AAU. He didn't have to do that in high school. Every night he's playing against guys that are bigger than him and taller than him. And yet I do think that he has the ability to be effective for BYU. He certainly can run well. But I just think that it takes time to adjust your game. You've never played against big guys the way that he is now. And now, if he hasn't figured it out in 2 years, and injuries have put him behind, I just don't see where he he can find his place within this program.
The other thing that could help him is I think that I look at the number of talented guys we have in practice, and that I think that's going to help him. He's going to either realize how to score over bigger athletic guys or else he's not. But he's finally practicing against a multitude of talented, high-level, high big-time recruit big men. And so I think that it's going to help him to be prepared for games. It's his only chance.
Question 16 on our big board. Tosh, who is going to be the team leader in blocks? We talked about perimeter defense. Is there any rim protectors on this team?
I think there's two that are decent. I know who you're choosing. I'm choosing Mika. I think Mika, the guy goes after every block. I remember his first game, his freshman year, him getting some incredible blocks and me already saying to the people next to me, he's the best player on the court on both sides. And foul trouble cost it so that his stats didn't pan out on that. But from the eye test, I remember game one, him looking like our best defender and most unguardable guy. And I hope that the stats do prove that this year and that he does lead the team in blocks.
Question 17, TJ Haas has a proclivity. He tries crazy trick shots. He'll shoot a 30-foot in the air rainbow after a whistle. he likes to do, it's sort of like Steph Curry. He just takes crazy trick shots after the whistle and he gets crowd reactions. He had three of those against Seattle Pacific. Tosh, how many trick shots after the whistle will TJ Haas make this year on average per game? Let's do over under. Will he have, and we'll set it right at one.
I was going to go with one, but that's weak. I'm going to go with over.
Whoa!
The guy,
that's fun.
The guy likes to take, he's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
He likes to be a showman, which I think is funny. We haven't, Jimmer had a little bit of that. Carlino tried that a little bit. But none of them actually had some of the flair that TJ Haas has.
Hang on. Are you saying that TJ Haas has more flair than Jimmer Fredette?
I am not saying that he's a better basketball player. He's a better basketball player. But I will go on record now to say that TJ Haas has more flair than Jimmer. And I think just
that's really something.
The passes that is a reckless the passes prediction. That he tries, the way that he dribbles, and like you mentioned, these for the crowd trick shots that he does after the whistle, the guy's a showman.
All right. Question 18. Continuing on the TJ Haas talk, Tosh. I'm really not sure where TJ Haas and Elijah Bryant, what they're going to look like when they share the floor together. They had TJ running the point. When we've seen Elijah Bryant showcased, he's been running the point. If they're on the floor at the same time, Tosh, where are they going to be? Who is where and how will they interact? Defensively, offensively? Offensively, I'm not sure it matters who brings the ball up the floor and kind of sets the table on the motion offense. It's not like we're running pick and roll or things like that typically. We're a motion offense, so that's less important. But defensively, and kind of their roles and where they'll set up on the floor.
So I think,
what do they look like when both Elijah Bryant and TJ Haas are on the floor?
Bryant will have to, I think, defend a lot of the three. Because that's our question mark with this squad, is who defends at the three. And Elijah Bryant is tall enough and athletic enough that against a lot of teams, I think that's going to be him. That we may, again, like last year, have a point guard that guards a pseudo big or a borderline big, you know, on the defensive side. Well, on offense, though, I actually have some concerns that both of those players are used to being high-volume shooters and being guys that have exactly the ball in their hand, and that's where all of their plays come from, them having the ball most of the time. And we've got two of those guys. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Question 20, LJ Rose. He was named a team captain. The biggest thing with him, and I know we asked this earlier about Eights, but he's got 1 year here in Provo, but during his time at Baylor and at the University of Houston, he really struggled with injuries. He's got an injury now. He's missed the first game of the year. He's scheduled to miss the next one. They think he might be available for the early part of the season here, but Is LJ Rose going to be healthy? Is it even going to matter?
I am for sure worried. And to add to that, he's got a foot injury. Foot injuries and basketball with tall guys, I mean, a lot of times they linger.
There's jumping and people land on your foot.
And you're constantly constantly putting strain and pressure and flexing everything
stop,
your foot's
start,
got.
Stop, yeah.
And so it is a legitimate concern. On the other side of that...
And we're not Virginia. We're running up and down the floor big time.
Yeah.
I mean, we are one of the fastest teams in America.
The thing that gives me some hope is that his peers on his team, the other players, voted him as a captain. I don't think you vote a guy as a captain unless you're sure that he's going to be able to play and contribute and be healthy. So that's the thing that gives me some hope, is that the guys that should know more than us think it he at least should be a captain.
All right, question 20. No true road games in non-conference this year, Tosh. Then when they have to go on the road in the West Coast Conference, it'll be their first time in a true road game facing real road environments. Will that be, do you think this will hurt them, no true road games? I mean, yeah, they're playing Illinois and Chicago. Like, I get that. But no true road games in non-conference. What are your thoughts on that?
Like, at first sniff, I don't like it. But the fact that, as you alluded to, we're playing enough neutral site games against decent teams that I think that we're going to be fine. We just can't lose to bad teams. That's my reoccurring theme with this year, whether it's at home, away, or neutral. But I think we're going to have enough neutral games, and obviously half of our in-conference games are away, that our schedule will look well-rounded enough.
All right, and question 21, BYU's been picked to finish third in the West Coast Conference. Will they finish better than third this year, Tosh? Listen, St. Mary's finished first. Gonzaga, of course. And by the way, St. Mary's brings back their entire team. They had no seniors. Everybody is back. Gonzaga, okay, they lost some guys. But Karnowski's back. And it's Gonzaga. It's freaking Gonzaga, Tosh. It's them. So I think probably correctly picked in third, but will they finish better than they've been picked, or will they finish right on third? What do you think?
I'm going to say we're going to finish second. That I think that St. Mary's is not going to be able to outgun us. That they're good. They had a good team last year, but I think that they have no great players. They actually have a great system and a lot of solid players. I think it's hurt BYU for years.
Emmett Nahr is so mad at you. Rahan is so mad at you right
and
now.
And I will stand by it.
Okay.
That I think that great players will beat a good system, and that's beat BYU in the past. I think this year we have great players, and that so because of that, although we're new and young, St. Mary's doesn't scare me. Gonzaga does. I think we finish second in the conference.
Well, the biggest thing is it's not even St. Mary's and Gonzaga that's the problem, Tosh. It is losing the home game to Pacific. It is the random loss at Portland, okay, at Pepperdine, getting swept by Pepperdine one year. You know, I mean, they're at Loyola Marymount. Look. That at Loyola Marymount game has always been a little bit trickier than it ever should be, and yet it's our first true road game this year. That makes me a little nervous, Tosh. But those are the games that have led to BYU being the third-place team.
Yeah, and that's what needs to change. That's what cost us making the tournament last year.
Yeah.
If those crappy losses, if we turn those into wins, our RPI skyrockets. That's what... A lot of people, you got to win good games, of course, but it's losing to bad teams that kills your RPI, that keeps you out of the tournament, that costs you, as you alluded to, conference titles. The one thing that I like, right now it's all just talk, but it has to start out as talk and thoughts, is that Emory said, we can no longer lose to the bad teams in our conference. He's thinking the same thing we are, and I hope that they take some ownership on that and take it personally.
Well, and there is a leadership thing there that can make a giant difference. You know, it's just like there were games where when we've been really good, right? When we've really had a team. What makes a great player really super duper uber great? Okay, is when they make the decision. This isn't happening tonight. I got this, fellas. We're gonna go out and win.
Yeah, totally.
And maybe Nick Emory can take it to that level. this season. That is an interesting, you know, idea.
If he can
do that, that can be huge. And with a guy that was as consistent as he was even as a freshman, there's a real chance that he can develop that and take it to that level. So that's good. In fact, you know what? I kind of feel as excited about Nick Emery coming into his sophomore year as I felt about, and this is me probably doing too much invoking of Jimmer, but as excited as I was Jimmer coming into his junior season. So there's that.
Yeah, no, I think that I'm not that far yet, but I think that he has the potential to be great. When we were looking at his numbers today, the guy, he's over 40% in all sorts of three-point shots. Yeah. Like,
he's just lethal shooter.
We need
scores
him
in every way that you
I loved imagine. Last year that he did not shy away from the big shots. This year we needed to have him hit a few more
that's
of those.
Right.
But the fact that he's not scared of them, that's good sign number one.
All right, and the magic question. Question 22. Danny H. Will BYU, will they qualify for the NCAA tournament this year?
Yes, I think so. It's going to be, as it's been for the last long while, where we are just constantly thinking we're on the fringe, but yeah, I think we make it.
So you think we're going to beat the bubble this year?
Yes. Where are you at?
I don't know. It's one of the big questions of the preview. I have been correct in predicting this year after year here. So I, before the season has begun, I've got a great record on this. I would say, oh, man, I'm with you. They're going to be right on the bubble again. And okay, we'll do it. They're going to beat the bubble. They're going to get under the bubble. But the problem is, Tosh, is that non-conference, again, they're going to need some help. We don't know if Illinois is going to be a great team. Princeton was a nice add late to the schedule. They're top, 36th in RPI? Like, that's a big game at home right away. That's a game they have to win. It's their first game. Princeton has everybody back. We've got nine new faces on the team. Like, that's a scary one. We will broadcast and get ready for that Princeton game. We'll have a podcast ready for you previewing that one. But, so, yeah, I'll do it. I'll go with you, Tosh. We'll be united on this. We're going to get in, but what? We're going to be a 10 seed?
It's a worry. We can't be saying what we've said the last several years, that it seems like we lose every big game.
I'm going to say play-in game. We're in the play-in game for a third time.
I'm going ninth. We're a 9 seed.
All right. There you have it. 22 big questions to hopefully preview. And if those questions are answered and kind of go the right way and we can figure them out relatively quickly, BYU can have a special season. Tosh, let's look down the road. Let's say these guys have 3 years together. What's the furthest they ever advance?
I'm still thinking Sweet 16. It's very hard to get to a Sweet 16. And
so hard that BYU's only done it twice in 29 tries.
And that I
have only done it when they've had the National Player of the Year on their team.
I don't think, I'm not there yet, that I think this team has multiple Sweet 16 runs like I've heard the more optimistic guys say, but I think we have one. I think this team has enough special players that things could go right for us to have one Sweet 16 run.
But a good building block, good first-year campaign is just getting there, right? No more NIT this year.
No, I think we finally go to the real dance again.
All right, there it is. The 2016-2017 Cougar Cast. BYU basketball preview. A very exciting, Tosh. I'm so excited, Tosh. Basketball, like, football's fun, and I don't get me wrong, I love covering football. So basketball, it's a place where things seem to make a little more sense, or I can explain them a little better.
And I think with how the world of sports is shaping up, BYU is still in an excellent position to be able to be a basketball powerhouse. And football, we've done a great job, but it seems like forces are going against us. Basketball, with how basketball works, with how many good players you need, with the fan base that we have, with the facilities, even with the conference that we're in, I think that there is no reason to think any negative thoughts about BYU's basketball future, and that's fun. We're at a good place.
And that's even in the, he's even saying that in the shadow of most people saying that the Big 12, including me, Big 12, the non-Big 12 selection hurt basketball the most.
For sure, Big 12 would have been fun, but the WCC gives us some fun games. It gives us, yeah, we're fine. That I think that it doesn't even matter what conference you're in basketball. If you have, there's only five players on the court. If you have three good guys, you can be dang good. And I look at this roster, and it's really easy for me to think we've got at least three dang good guys.
All right, there it is, the Cougar Cast here. Follow us on Twitter, and if you can, please give us a rating out there on iTunes and let people know that you listen to this show. Thank you for listening, and Tosh, biggest thing, did they take you on the dunk squad this year?
No, and I'm ticked. Ugh. I was expecting some sort of
You've been
of
working
fast.
On your trampoline yeah. skills, too.
I mean, plenty. I can jump higher than I could a year ago, but they still, I guess, don't think I can jump high enough.
All right, maybe next year, pal.
Thank you for listening to Cougar Cast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games and go Cougars!